Didn't even get a chance to talk about the Manchester derby, which I know you were very keen to. What's your ideal outcome of that game, by the way?
Manchester United win, no threat to Liverpool, and Manchester City are. It's as simple as that.
OTB AM, live weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
Okay, you're very welcome along to this week's edition of Friday Night Racing, and Johnny Ward is back in studio. We're going to speak with Danny Mullins in a couple of minutes' time. We're going to pick our 10 to watch for the jump season. The jump season is officially underway properly with a big bang last weekend, but we're going to get into what we can expect for the rest of the year. We should look back on Frodon's victory.
Yeah, it was just a great storyline, Ger. It was Frodon is a very popular horse, particularly so, I guess, in Britain. He seems as much as Bryony Frost is, as Bryony Frost is Frodon. They're kind of just that partnership. It's hard to associate him with any other jockey, and his will to win was marvelous. And I think there were lots of narratives to his victory. One, I suppose, he won a race that involved a hot favourite who was the Gold Cup winner in Real Indo. Two, he enhanced Paul Nicholls' excellent record at Down Royal.
Not bad.
No, but at the same time, it is in the context of Paul Nicholls becoming not an irrelevance in terms of Cheltenham, but like nowhere near the force he was.
Frodon won on Stephen's Day, Boxing Day, last year in the King's
December
Lodge.
December 26th, yeah.
Right. And that was a massive surprise, I think. It was like 14, 16 to 1 or something.
Yeah.
She was piloting the 16. Anyway, you know what I mean. And then didn't really do much for the rest of the year. Is that?
Yeah, he's probably not a Gold Cup horse, really. It's very hard for him over that trip to just keep going out in front. But Nicholls said that Down Royal would suit him. But Nicholls himself, you know, he was obviously the king of Cheltenham himself. Nicky Henderson would have kind of been dominating Cheltenham not that long ago, and now they find it incredibly difficult to deal with the Irish trainers, particularly Willie Gordon and Henry de Bromhead. So it was kind of a throwback to see Paul Nicholls win that race. And in light of Bryony Frost, you know, taking that case to the BHA in terms of intimidation and abuse in the weighing room, and the potential consequences for her in terms of how she's perceived, as much as I'm not taking sides on this, but it was something that normally isn't done. They say what happens in the jockey's room stays in the weighing room.
Yeah, but we're all in favour of whistleblowers in this show, just to point that out.
No, I'm not
saying that all Myrta nonsense is.
I'm not saying that at all, but Bryony's number of rides, like in a 12-month period, have gone down a lot, and there was speculation as to why that was. I don't know. She may just be riding a bit less at the moment, but she gave the horse a great ride. And yeah, I'm not for 1 minute saying I condone anything that may or may not have gone on in the weighing room. But what she did was probably either, you know, it was a bit brave because a lot of people just wouldn't do it. So that was interesting. She got a very good reception, I think, in Down Royal. And all of that, and just the fact that, you know, Galvin ran a great race, it was just brilliant to watch. They came to the second last. At that stage, it looked like Frodon was going to finish fourth or last or whatever, and he just rallied and rallied and rallied, and then that was followed by Envoi Alain getting back on track and winning as well.
Before we get into that, what was the story of Manella Indo? Is that just early in the season, and we'll see more as the season goes on? So
you're
not writing off any of the horses.
No,
it's like
I didn't fancy really Manella Indo at the price anyway, because I thought like it was a good race, and he's you know, he's disappointed a couple of times before. It was his first run back. It's a long road ahead. And by all accounts, Rachel Blackmore was very happy with him. And I should mention as well, there was obviously the narrative that Jack Kennedy was supposed to be riding Manella Indo, but Gordon Elliott just said rather publicly, no, you're not.
No.
You're not. Go back in your box there. You're going to ride Delta Work. And that was a lovely narrative to it as well. He didn't. Envoi Alain became. Rachel Blackmore picked up two rides she probably didn't think she was going to get.
Isn't the soap opera important?
Yeah, the soap opera is great. Like, you know, and We need that stuff. We need the bit of crack. We need trainers who are Gordon Elliott. He's very honest. Like he doesn't. He more or less says it as it is. And that's just how he is. He will tell you like, this horse is good. This horse isn't much good. I made a fool of myself here. We know he's had an interesting season, an interesting year, but he kind of laid down the law. And it's like, listen, I'm back in the game here. And as a consequence, Envoi Alain wasn't ridden by Davy Russell, but rather was ridden by Rachel Blackmore and did the job very well.
Okay, so Envoi Alain is the horse that we were talking about last week, where you said Henry de Bromhead had made a point of saying, I haven't quite got to a full deep understanding of this horse yet. I'm paraphrasing. You said, was it get to grips with whatever the phrase he was. Clearly, he's got there.
Yeah, well, okay.
Or he's getting there.
The problem with the race was, and it's one of these races that makes you wonder, like, why would you ever have a bet when a horse that was rated 90 finished second, and horses that were like a Tiestes winner and a horse that was rated maybe 130 were well beaten. So it was a strange race. Coco Beach probably needed the run, but I think sometimes in races like this, it's kind of like if you go out running with your mate and you're of roughly similar ability, but he's a little bit better than you, but you haven't run in a while, and if you try to go with him, you just end up absolutely legless. I think there was an element of that in that Envoi Len probably produced a very good performance. But last season, the talk was from the likes of Keith Donoghue and those who knew him at home was that he's very dependent on a routine, so he needs to kind of... he needs a kind of a set, like basically the same thing happening in his work every day and no changes, and he's a little bit quirky. And when he went over to Henry de Bromhead's, apparently it took him a little bit of time to adjust, which is normal.
Yep.
He boiled over at Cheltenham. He was a big drifter in the market on the day. I couldn't see him beaten, but the market started suggesting, you know, there could be issues here. He fell at the second or the third. Not sure exactly what happened at Punchestown. I think he was lame after the race, but he kind of went from being this absolute superstar that could be the best thing ever to like losing two races in a row, and you're kind of thinking, well, what happens here? So I think for the narrative of the season ahead, we don't know where he's going to really run, but he still has so much of an aura about him, and I think he restored that at Down Royal.
And so it ends up in the Gold Cup, or...
I don't know.
No? Where?
Like, we don't have the right man on here to talk about today, maybe, in Henry de Bromhead. I don't think he'll go on the Gold Cup. I think Henry has, like, what, the first and the second in the Gold Cup last year. Okay. So he personally isn't under pressure to run him in that, but he's very, very quick. I would prefer to see him taking on, you know, the two-milers, but maybe he'll end up in the Ryanair. I personally don't think he'll run the Gold Cup.
Okay.
Certainly not yet, anyway.
Okay, well, we have plenty of time to speculate about that. This afternoon, a reminder, Friday Night Racing on Off the Ball is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie or follow the Twitter account at HRI Racing. And the hashtag is Every Racing Moment. Now, I'm delighted to say Danny Mullins is with us this afternoon. Danny, good afternoon to you. How are you getting on?
Good now, and you?
Yeah, pretty good. So this is officially our preview of the jump season, although as we've just been talking about, the jump season is already up and running. How's it going for you so far?
Yeah, it's okay. Nothing, plenty more winners wouldn't do, but nice weekend to look forward to, and things are going to get busier from here on in.
You were off for a little while, for a couple of months there, with a not very nice sounding neck and back injury. How are you feeling physically?
Physically great, yeah. Yeah, it was a bit of time on the sidelines, but I've recovered well, and you know, back in the winner's enclosure, back hitting the ground, doing all the normal things jockeys do, and still loving it as much as ever.
When you say hitting the ground, you mean you've actually fallen off already since. What was that like?
Grand, yeah. I actually got a fall off one of my mother's down in Thurles there a couple of weeks ago, and yeah, body seemed to take it well. So, you know, I've been lucky enough. Davy Russell took a fall, nasty fall in Down Royal, and he's been on the sidelines for a few days. You know, it's just difficult to have your body in good enough shape to take these falls. And, you know, Puppy Power, another man that was out injured for a while, got a nasty kicking when he hit the deck in Tremor a few weeks ago, and he's recovering from another injury subsequent to that fall. So, you know, you're never sure of avoiding the injury, but you put yourself in a good place to withstand what comes at you.
In a way... And this is going to sound like a stupid question, but in a way, was your last fall a good fall, so that it was like, okay, I've been through that again, that you know, your worst imagination when you're out injured with the fall that you did have originally, that the next fall you survive, you're like, okay, that's over with.
I'd actually gotten a fall at home as well before that. So the first fall back was out of the way, probably a bit closer than I'd like to tell the specialist to my back right now, but I was fine after it anyway.
Was there much of a, actually just on Davy there, Danny, what was the general expectations of jockeys that he would come back, because it was going on for so long, and I think a lot of us thought he was a bit daft, like, but he was single-minded and he did come back.
Personally, I didn't expect him to come back. I don't think he had anything to prove, you know, he'd done it all and at his age, but it just goes to show the fantastic appetite he has for the game. You know, he's a man, he's won all the big races, he's been champion jockey, he's won his Grand Nationals, and he just obviously loves being a jockey. And if you don't have that, it's not a sport to be in. And I'm sure he wants to get another few years out of it. I see plenty of high profile riders retiring in the last few years. And, you know, plenty of them say they're enjoying life on the other side, but it's not a day I look forward to when I'm retired.
Well, actually, I think, yeah, the psychology of Davey's whole thought process and his intent is very interesting. Because, like, what age are you now?
29.
So say you're 13 years old, or you're 42, for argument's sake. Do you think you'd be in that position, or do you think you'll have changed? Because you don't want to retire now, obviously, at all, even if you had a bad injury. But do you think you'll change in the next 10, 12 years?
At the moment, I'd say my mindset won't change. Who knows what happens when you get to that age and, you know, what your personal circumstances are. But you know, I think we're lucky enough that we're well enough looked after. We had a chat last year and I just plucked a number out of the sky that 45 was a good age that we can push to. And, you know, Davey is already, for a man that's ridden through the last couple of decades, he's trying to push that limit already. So it's fantastic to see jockeys being able to do that even at this stage.
The fear of it all ending must be, you're a long way from that obviously, but it must be really difficult for a top level sports person, because particularly maybe something as thrilling as being a national hunt jockey, because once it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah, I suppose it's the feeling I think of, what am I going to do when I grow up? The last day I get off a horse, that's when work starts. I'm very lucky, you know, for me, it's a hobby. You know, it's well documented, you get your falls, this and that happens, but that's part of it. That could happen to somebody stumbling out of a nightclub drunk and they could pick up a similar injury. You know, it's for me to do what I do every day and love it. It's a fantastic lifestyle.
One of the things that we also talked about last time was whenever you have a bad day, you eat a lot of chocolate. That won't get you to Tom Brady style 42, 43, 44 world class. At some point, you're going to have to cut that out.
Yeah, you know, that's an ongoing battle. Cut down a little bit, but I still enjoy my chocolate. But I'm okay. I don't drink, I don't smoke, or don't put any other toxins, so I'm not too bad.
Okay, you're going the right direction. You also had some incredible highlights over the last period of time. You were on for a few minutes the night after that you won at Cheltenham. As the season finished and you look back, it's a real shame that big Cheltenham win didn't happen in front of the crowd and roar you home. But at the same time, it's on the CV in the record books when years to come, people won't know or remember that it wasn't in front of the crowds, and you'll have that Cheltenham winner banked.
Didn't bother me that there was nobody there. It didn't take away from it one bit. The people who mattered to me got in touch with me afterwards. That feeling crossing the line in Cheltenham, I didn't need a couple of 100,000 people there roaring at me to make that any better.
And the whole Florin Porter story was a bit mad as well, that you were on the horse in the first place.
Yeah, it was funny. You know, I've ridden a great portion of my rides would have been for Willie over there, and you know his record at the festival is fantastic. And you know, it's funny that my first spare was the one that popped up and won. You know, looking back, Mark Walsh would be a regular rider for JP McManus. I think it was his first festival winner, a spare ride for Willie Mullins as well. So
who was that again?
Was it Blueberry? Might have been his first winner in the Coral Cup. So it's a funny game where what you might expect to happen doesn't happen. And, you know, anytime you're dealing with racehorses, they'll keep you well leveled.
What do you make of him as a horse going forward? I know he's running in the Lismullen on Sunday, and I think Gavin has a massive kind of time for his engine going back as long as he's going left-handed this season, I think.
Yeah, you know, I'm definitely looking forward to riding him on Sunday, and I think hopefully he'll run a decent race. But it's funny, if you look at where he started last year, was it off 95, and he built his way all the way up through the season. It's something I'd kind of put similar to Princess Zoe, where she built all the way up through last season to end up a grade one winner. Then she came back the following year and she didn't instantly perform because she was just pitched in at the very top at the start of the season, where people maybe wouldn't forgive a horse for that, you know, for that they need a couple of runs to get back to the level. Now, I think the Florin Porter has a great chance of winning on Sunday, but, you know, Sire de Burley, highly rated horse, and a few others that you wouldn't discount in the race, they're, you know, they're going to make a proper race of it. You're kind of off the same hymn sheet maybe with Manella Indo. Before he really proved what he could do in the Gold Cup, he needed a lot of racing to get him to that level of fitness. He was quite disappointing in Leopardstown. Manella Indo was before the Gold Cup last year. He won two Mickey Mouse races, but needed that racing at high level to really bring him to his peak. So it'll be interesting to see how Gavin wants to campaign him through the year, you know, and maybe he'll see a different horse at home and he won't need that much racing. It's just, that's the feel a good trainer will get from their horse.
I actually hadn't taken any notice of the jockey bookings coming on, so that's helpful you point that out. And it is, I was talking to Gavin Cromwell recently and he said how he's kind of, he's spreading the jockeys around a bit this season, which is obviously fine, but it's kind of your luck now that you got the ride at Cheltenham, and you're obviously back on, I guess, well, you're back on Sunday anyway, if not for the foreseeable.
Yeah, sure, we'll see, hopefully. Yeah, we have a good season ahead of us, and it's a nice one to be riding.
We were talking about Manella Indo before you came on, and last week, the performance, it's interesting, you kind of talk about, in football terms, it would be periodization, where there are just certain times of the year where you are able to peak. You can't peak the whole year. Others, it sounds like, actually start and need to keep going and keep going and keep going and build to a crescendo, and it's just making sure that the crescendo arrives at the right moment for the biggest races of the season.
Yeah, definitely. You know, you see that very much so with Willie Mullins's horses. You know, they're not that busy at this time of the year. He'll only bring them to near their peak at Christmas, really be humming by Cheltenham, and they finish off very strongly for Punchestown. You know, it's been tactical about where you want your best horses to produce their best. You know, it's a long, hard season. These races, top class races, take their toll on horses.
It's hard to get right as well, Ger. Like he says now that Album Photo, he didn't run him enough last season, and prior to the Gold Cup, the whole narrative was, well, we bring him to Tramore, he wins at Tramore, he wins the Gold Cup, and that's the way it suited. And I don't know if you're reading those quotes, Danny, where he's kind of like, I'm actually going to run him more this season, almost as if he has some regrets about Cheltenham, and even your uncle is kind of learning on the job with horses.
Definitely, but I suppose the mitigating factor of that was
COVID.
We had racing in Cheltenham last year, and then Everton shut down for Punchestown, so they're out on grass a month earlier. They're probably coming in a little bit fatter and heavier, so maybe they just didn't come along as much through last season. You know, it's there's plenty of different ways to look at that, but you have to adjust to what you know.
The other thing, of course, is that what worked one year for Album Photo doesn't work the next year, because the horse is a year older, things have changed slightly. Like, it
isn't very good Gold Cup. Yeah.
You know, it's not a straightforward science. Right, a reminder, Friday Night Racing is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Danny, before we get into our tote preview of the season, I just want to play you a bit of footage from, is this Down Royal where you're riding two horses?
Yeah.
What happened here?
I suppose the other horse is just in my way. I'm glad there's no audio on it. Just carried me to the outside wing at the two previous fences, and as he was doing that, it was just giving me whatever chance I had of winning the race. Every time he just brought me off the where I wanted to go, he was making it smaller and harder for me to win the race. So I just looked over and I thought, well, I need you out of there, and I don't need to be heading to the outside wing to jump every fence to get around you once you start wandering.
Did you break any rules of racing as a matter of interest, or is there even a rule on that?
No.
No.
You know, loose horse, he might as well have been a spectator out in the track.
Yeah, could be a new sport, actually, where you have to ride one horse, like the lads who ride a bike and carry the other bike home to the left. Like, would be interesting, Danny. You seem to have an aptitude for it anyway.
I didn't win. That was the main problem anyway. It didn't work. So I'll have to figure that one out a little bit better.
But it's, obviously quite high pace when you're doing that. And just instinctive, you were like, okay, I'm going to be able to do this and get rid of it. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't something you had to think too hard about.
No, no. You know, whatever, to me, my natural instinct is do whatever I can to win the race at hand. And I knew if that horse just kept upsetting my horse, I was going to have zero chance of winning the race. So I just had a look, assessed the situation on split second decision and said, getting him out of my way is going to increase my chance of winning. But I didn't win, so didn't work.
Maybe you wouldn't have won anyway. If you're looking at racing, running and that, and the betting and all that, like, how important is it to get a soft lead versus to be pestered from your perspective?
Oh, very, very. You know, a lot of the trainers I'd ride for like their horses ridden forward, but, you know, I think giving a jockey instructions that they have to be in front is the worst thing ever. You know, I love being able to manipulate a race from the front. It gives me a much better chance of winning, where I've ridden plenty of winners dropped in as well, but you're just a slave to whatever the person on the front end does. You know, it's easy to assess that in the first mile, what's going to happen, where, you know, I think the pace, early pace of a race is so important. You need to be getting out the gates reasonably handy and then assess what's happening around you. And if they're going too quick, you can drop back. But if you're on the front end doing what you want to do, you can really manipulate the race to suit you.
And just finally on that then, you some of your jockey colleagues were in the Coast, the Curra, cycling, all that, and in cycling you have to be in the pack because otherwise you're expending way too much energy out front because of the aerodynamics situation. How is it not the same in horse racing, where if you're in front it actually benefits you, whereas sometimes you're looking, if there's a headwind, how is it not favourable to a horse if he's in the pack?
Well, I suppose for a headwind, Cork last week was an example of strong winds. You know, we had a crosswind coming. Once you turn out a back straight, the wind was hitting you from the left, and then you had a tailwind down the home straight. So ideally, you'd have a bit of cover down the back, and then it doesn't matter where you are in home straight, even if you've got a bit of tailwind. Once you're racing round in a circle over 2 miles to 3 miles, it doesn't matter as much. Whereas for cycling, you know, they're going in the same direction a long way for, you know, 100 kilometers or whatever. You know, it affects you more. But in Formula One terms, back position is everything for horse racing. You know, it's much harder to get past one, and even if I've got somebody in front of me, I'm sitting a half length down, I put someone in a pocket on the inside, it's my decision when I let them out of pocket to go and win the race. And if I do that late enough, they're not riding a machine, it's a horse, they can only quicken so much. Tactical awareness is a big part of it. But, you know, that's probably getting into races which are run a lot steadier in the early part of it. The steadier, if you're on a very good horse, you want a strong gallop because you're the best horse on the day. You see that with Envoy Allen, jumped out, went a strong gallop and nothing touched him. But if you're riding a bad horse, well, not a bad horse, but a much lower rated horse that has a much less chance of winning, and you steady things up in the first half of the race, you're just making a game of Russian roulette for the lads who are trying to avoid traffic and get a clear run to come and win the race. And you give your own horse a better chance of winning. I suppose the more experience you have, the better you are at your tactical awareness.
That all sounds really interesting, isn't it? It's and when you talk about Formula One there, I do wonder how close we are to a proper Drive to Survive style over the jump season.
That'd be brilliant.
It would be, wouldn't it?
It would, like, I've said that many times. Like, even Danny, if you follow the characters at the Curra, which you wouldn't be as au fait with maybe as some of the flat lads, but, like, if you followed, even if, imagine the crack if you had, like, cameras following Willie Mullins, Gordon Elliott, Henry de Bromhead, Joseph O'Brien, and whoever else for, like, the course of the National Hunt season with all that entails, night, noon, and morning.
Yeah, it'd be unbelievable if it could be pulled off, yeah.
There we go. There's the challenge for HRI.
Right. Jamie Benson is also with us. Jamie, good afternoon to you. How are you?
Hey, Grant, thanks. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Welcome back. So we're going to do a Tote 10 to follow on the jumps. Kindly, Tote have agreed to pay $5,000 to a charity, irrespective of what happens. So that's you kind of off the hook for responsibility, Johnny, which I know you like. Not right, Jamie?
Not sure about that. Yeah. But, I might follow the instructions a bit more than I did the last time.
That would be good.
Still managed to beat you. But
Danny's also picking 10 to follow, so I might wait and see what he picks and then copy 8 of them and make it look, oh no, I disagree with you on these 2 points here. That's
Danny also has a fantastic track record in this game in that last year he picked Energamine when no one had even heard of him, let alone be able to say it.
I don't think he was on the list. I asked you to put him on the list last year.
Absolutely spot on. I should have taken the hint. I think I backed him for the RSA then, like an Egypt.
There we go.
I think I was also on the wrong thing. Anyway, let's not.
That's the problem with Cheltenham. It's so diluted now. It's hard to know what they could have 4 options when they should really only have 1 or whatever. Anyway,
right. So Danny, Jamie. First, explain to us how this works for anybody who is new, and we have new people joining all the time, who didn't hear that I beat Johnny at this last year. How exactly does this work?
So basically, you pick 10 horses to follow throughout the season. They score points according to how they perform in various races, according to the grade of each race. In short, there are also bonus races, which are basically all the big races throughout the National Hunt season that you'd think of, all the big festivals, that kind of thing. They're the races you want to target because you get double points for them. So ultimately, it's about trying to pick a horse, a list of 10 horses, broadly speaking, targeting the grade one headline races, but maybe with then a couple of darker horses that might either string up a sequence of wins or could pop up at a big price because you get bonus points if you have a big price winner as well. So it's on paper very easy. When you look back at the winners list from the previous year, there's not even normally an Energony that you hadn't heard of. It's normally just a whole load of grade one horses, and it's just a matter of picking the right ones that have the season. Easy on paper, but as all of us are aware, it can make you look a fool sometimes as well.
So you want horses that are going to be well exposed over the course of the year and get an opportunity to win. They don't have to win the absolutely massive races, but that's a super bonus points, literally and metaphorically.
Yes, yeah, spot on. So it's predominantly weighted towards the sort of 3-mile chases. If you think about the biggest races throughout the season, it is things like the Savills, the Irish Gold Cup, King George Gold Cup, all those sorts of things. So all of those races are our bonus races, so it's a small bit of a bias towards the 3-mile chases, but there's plenty of space in there to pick all sorts of horses.
Danny, what's your expectation for how this season is going to play out? Are we going to have a fairly similar calendar and experience for everybody kind of pre-COVID, or is there still a little bit of stuff coming out in the wash for races and meetings that may have disappeared over the last 18 months that are only coming back? What's your instinct about?
I think Everton will pretty much be back to normal. Right. You know, things have resumed, and race meetings are, you know, they sit nicely in the programme book. So I don't think there's going to be anything that's going to change too drastically.
And will there be as much travel between Ireland and England of Irish horses heading over, English horses coming over here? What's your understanding about where that might go?
Sure, I think I'm not well educated on it, but I think it's maybe double the cost to bring a horse to run in England. So if you're running for bigger prize money, I'd imagine the higher grade horses will have no problem traveling over, but probably less of the lower grade horses. And I could actually, it'd be interesting if a few trainers, credit to Paul Nicholls for bringing Frodon over to Down Royal. He showed a proper bit of guts there. You know, the English horses were definitely below par to the Irish horses last year. And the fact that Paul Nicholls is coming over here, getting a bit of match practice on Irish soil, is very interesting. That could be... It'd be fantastic to see so many English horses coming to the likes of the Dublin Festival and, you know, Leopardstown at Christmas, where that could really bring their game up a little bit more and have a good bit more match practice before they get in there against a lot of the better Irish ones come Cheltenham.
That was something I had a big issue with, Jared, that the English trainers and the British trainers in general weren't doing that, but that was prior to the 23-5 result for the Irish in Cheltenham last year, which, as Danny's alluding to there, would discourage them from going over. But there are a couple of other issues here which aren't particularly relevant to the 10 to follow, but as Danny mentions, the cost of the whole the Brexit thing is as somebody has written in the paper, I can't remember who wrote this, nobody has been able to tell me one benefit of Brexit, right? And that was not nothing to do with racing, that was just in general. But there are lots of drawbacks in terms of bringing horses over. But then we had the thing in COVID where the British trainers sort of, they essentially decided that low-grade Irish horses weren't able to come over because they were trying to limit the amount of transport between the two countries for purely sound pandemic-related reasons. But then when that all went, when that all basically expired, Aidan McGuinness, who has a runner, obviously a case of view at the Breeders' Cup, he was venting his frustration about this. The British trainers have just decided not to change that. So they've actually stopped certain brackets of Irish horses going over purely because of what I can only perceive to be insecurity, and basically they don't want outsiders winning their low-grade races because British racing's in a bad way. So it's a weird state of affairs, and that to answer the question you asked, Danny, it will definitely affect the amount because Irish horses enhance British race meets, just like British horses. Sadly, not enough of them come over anymore, but they greatly enhance Irish race meets.
Jamie, I'll give you an opportunity to answer this, but I hope you don't think that we brought you on here to be Johnny's punch bag.
No, not for a second. I mean, annoyingly, despite my accent, my mum's from Kilkenny, and that's where I'm based a lot of the time. So I might sound very English, but I'm very much Team Ireland when it comes to the racing.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting year on that score, though. Like, Danny, what was the experience like last year? I know I wasn't at Cheltenham now, but I know there was an Irish kind of, like, I don't know, an Irish area or an Irish bubble.
Ghetto,
yeah. But the ghetto was where it was all happening. Do you know what I mean? It was 23 winners five.
Winning, yeah.
Like, there was almost
an enclave,
a feeling that...
It was a joke. I'm getting the eagle eyes from JP.
Yeah, ghetto, I was kind of, wouldn't be sure about that one. But enclave or whatever. But, like, the enclave was far bigger than... Or, see, the enclave was dominating anyway, to keep going with this tired analogy. But what was it like, Danny? Because it must be to the point where, like, 23-5, it should effectively be the other way around, give or take. The British should have way more winners. So, like, it must have been almost like the Irish were willing a British winner towards the end, or what was it like?
No, we were all willing our own, you know. It was fantastic. You know, everybody was really enjoying it. So many people, like myself, had my first winner, Jofford, Emmett Mullins, you know, there was plenty there. Actually, even on that Thursday was a big day for us. But even from the jockey's point of view, it was funny, we were split up in different weigh rooms. It was nearly like coming out the tunnel in Croke Park, like, and you know, you're running out against the opposition. The first place we met the English riders was in the weigh room, and we cantered to the start with them, where normally you'd be in chatting with the lads, you know, a couple of hours before racing, and everybody would know what's going to happen, and maybe that put you know, things maybe a disadvantage. Well, I suppose being in the weigh room and having those little chats beforehand, it's very important for riders. And, you know, maybe the English lads weren't sure what was going to happen with the Irish horses, and the fact that they weren't allowed in with us maybe give them an unfair disadvantage. Maybe we should be kept apart in future.
That's an interesting theory.
Ten of the first 11 home in the Grand National were Irish trained. Like... And this is,
you keep talking about like this like it's a disaster. I can't wait to play poker with you sometime. No, where I'm losing really badly and you take pity on me and just give me your money, because that's what you're talking about here. It's like I'm taking pity on these people here.
It's not a healthy state of affairs for Irish racing.
It's a one-off, it'll cycle through.
It's not a one-off.
Okay, well, let's wait.
It's not
see.
A one-off.
If we hammer them again 23-5 this year, then I'll let you have
it's,
your
it's more likely we
party for the great massive machine, the unstoppable juggernaut of British racing.
It's more likely we've 23 winners or more than it is Britain winning the Prestbury Cup. That's how bonkers it is. It's an anomaly.
But I counter-argue that, Johnny, and say I think it could be a dangerous time for Irish racing to get complacent about how successful they were last year. Obviously, the English didn't like it. They're going to want to buy all the better horses out of France. They're going to spend more money.
Who, though?
On more of the pint-to-pinters. And
who are the owners, though, Danny? Like, so who are the owners? Like, I was talking to Ollie Murphy, and he's saying it's not that easy to sell these expensive horses over in Britain, whereas in Ireland, as you know, they're basically readily bought for a big owner.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm sure there's a bit of it. There's a good few rich English businessmen that want a bit of honour and want to bring it back onto their home ground. I wouldn't be relaxing. If I was an Irish trainer, I'd be working twice as hard this year to try and replicate it rather than sitting back and saying how good we were last year.
Yeah, the Kilkenny hurlers.
Yeah, there's Brian Cody right there, future Kilkenny manager Danny Mullins. There we go.
Or the Dublin footballers didn't win last year. Yeah. Well, let's wait and see. Okay, let's try and pick some horses here. Jamie, give us, I'm not asking you for an ergamine, but if you can give us something along the lines of that we could certainly copy shoehorn Control A, Control C, Control V into my 10 to pick. What are you looking at? What types of horses? Obviously the 3 milers in particular, you're weighted against them or in favour of them rather. So what else are you looking for?
Yeah, so the sort of main body of my 10 to follow will be based around the 3 mile chasers. But then outside of that, you're looking at horses that either will run in bonus races or that might string up a sort of sequence. And quite often that means novice chasers. The Arkle and what was the RSA, so the 3 mile novice chase at the festival, is they're both bonus races. So if you can pick the sort of preeminent 2 mile or 3 mile novice chaser, that will put you in good stead. That said, this season I can't remember a time that was ever as competitive as this year's novice chasing crop. I mean, you look at Appreciate It, even Fernie Hollow, I thought would go to the Champion Hurdle, he's going novice chasing. Obviously, you've got Bob Olinger, who's so impressive, and those are all just over sort of 2 mile, 2 mile four. And you're wondering, crikey, like, which one of those is going to come out on top? So it's actually quite difficult to try and pick amongst them. So I might look for horses that either are going to win some soft races or might potentially go over to England or something like that. So to sort of that end, a couple that I quite like, one is LMA, who was just beaten in the Mayor's Chase at Cheltenham by Cole Reavy, form which now looks pretty decent in hindsight. But I think she could pick up a lot of quite easy Mayor's Chases at sort of odds on, and will be campaigned to that extent and probably end up at the Mayor's. Again, not very many bonus races, but she's very versatile. Could run over anywhere between 2 and 3 miles. So you'd hope that she'll be well placed for JP. And then the other one would be On the Ropes, who I'd be interested to get the view of Danny, especially, because I think he's now almost a third season novice chaser, having not won last year, but he won last time out. I think it was in the Munster National. And he's now rated 152, goes for the Hennessy. If he were to win that, that's a bonus race. So that would be a 50-point score there. But also then all options are open for him because he's still a novice chaser. So he could yet end up in the 3 mile festival chase or even be a Gold Cup horse. You don't know. Obviously, he's got a lot of improving to do from there, but the options are all open to him. So I think he's a really interesting one that is currently only in 1.2% of lists, I think. So
okay.
I'll be interested to hear Danny's view on him.
Well, let's get it. Danny, what do you make of On the Ropes?
Yeah, On the Ropes, he was very good in Limerick last day, won the Munster National quite well, so he did. And you know, as Jamie is saying, yeah, he has plenty of experience before back to that beginner's chase last year, and he chased home Monkfish. Now Monkfish probably won a canter that day, but it's still quite solid form. And the year before, I think I was third on him in Gorn, only a length behind Milan Native, who went on to win at the Cheltenham Festival. They win the amateur chase that year as well. So the form really does stack up quite well. You know, he's up to 153 now. The handicapper probably is going to be getting near him. The Hennessy, the Ladbroke Trophy now, will be a big indication as to how good he is. You know, that can be a proper stepping stone for some grade one horses if they can win that with plenty of weight. And for my 10 to follow, I've actually gone for in the handicap chase division, another horse that's going to probably take him on in that is Fiddler on the Roof for the Tizard team. Brendan Powell won on him in Carlisle there a couple of weeks back, maybe last weekend. I thought he's a nice horse that's going the right way. Bit sluggish to win over 2.5, but looked an out-and-out 3 mile chaser. And he's the one I'm going for the bonus points in the Ladbroke Trophy in Newbury.
Are you, as a matter of interest, Danny, when you get in after a day's racing, sitting down and watching every single race to see at what point in the future at some point in the future you might be coming up against Fiddler in the Roof, or was Fiddler in the Roof something you had your eye on and so you went and looked back and caught that race anyway?
No, I actually remember looking at him. I would have watched him run plenty of races last year and that, and his place plenty and disappointing. But if you get back to his novice hurdle days, I remember he won in Sandown and everybody was going on about him being a supreme novice horse, and I could never see it, you know, and I probably knocked a horse back then. I said he won't win a supreme novice and it'd be ridiculous running him in the race. But now I'll have to give him credit where it's due. He fits the profile of a very good staying handicap chaser. Who knows if he could make it? He wasn't far off the top level as a novice hurdler, so he could make it up to the level. I think he's a real potential Grand National horse. It'll be interesting to see how the Ladbroke Trophy goes, and he could even go down the Gold Cup route. Don't know if he's good enough to win that, but would really give him a big chance in a Grand National.
What silks are you wearing there with your grandmother, actually, in the photo there behind you? It's intrigued.
That is Total Recall after the Tiestes and Gorn.
And Total Recall, he only won the Munster National, or the Limerick National, and went on to win the Hennessy, or the what's now the Labrador Trophy, which is exactly what On the Ropes is trying to do.
That's it, definitely.
I see even nod to your would-be flat career as well with all the cool Moore horses behind that.
And an American Grand National this side as well.
It's all there. Danny sets up, you know the way some lads are like Richie McCormick will be in his bedroom, whatever, and be in his jocks, and he's just, that's his office now. Danny's set it up like kind of a more of a David Myler type thing.
What else? There's a bit of hot chocolate on one of the presses here beside me. I like that.
Tom Brady does not approve of that. Okay, so Fiddler on the Roof, that's what you're looking for that. Oh, is there an equivalent to an Ergamine that you're like, that is so off the grid at this point that like we should all be getting behind?
Not really. I've put in Fernie Hollow as my I think it's come out. Has Willie said he's going
chasing? Yeah,
novice chasing. I wasn't sure. I kind of had him there. For me he would have had the ability to possibly go down a champion hurdle route, but he has the scope to go jumping fences as well. So I think he's a real contender for, you know, going the 2 mile race in Leopardstown, Christmas, Dublin Festival, Arkell, back to Punchestown. There's a lot of grade ones can be won with him if he stays sound. I think my other novice chaser is Bob Ollinger. I could see him going up and trip a little bit, possibly the 2.5, 2.5 route. You know, he'll fit into all those festivals as well over a little bit longer of a trip.
Well, what's really going to win the champion hurdle with if he's just like, these appreciators could clearly go the champion hurdle route, as you mentioned Fernie Hollow could. Has he actually planned this out where these lads are likely going to have to take each other on at some stage? Because as Jamie was saying, Danny, that the amount of novices there, like even just talking to Henry de Bromhead alone, the amount of novices this season is unbelievable how good they are.
Yeah, definitely. I'm not sure. You've caught me on the hop there. I'm not sure what...
I don't think he has anything is the answer, actually. I don't think he has an out-and-out champion.
Saldia
maybe, yeah.
Mm. But they're, you know, they're getting on too, but they're two decent horses, but would... you'd probably fancy Honeysuckle taking them on as well, but anything can happen, never fear one.
I think a horse I'd give a mention to in that division would also be Aspire Tower, who was he had that tricky second season last year, transitioning from juvenile into open company over 2 miles, but he ran very creditably. I think he was third in the champion hurdle, he was second in the grade one at Christmas at Leopardstown. And, you know, he's entitled to improve from 5 to 6. And he doesn't need to improve that much to be right in the picture in those top grade ones, other than obviously Honeysuckle, who's head and shoulders above. But, you know, he's the sort of horse that could surprise a few and run some big races.
This must be like, you know, one of these polls in North Korea or wherever is literally 100% of the vote. Like, is everyone putting Honeysuckle in?
I'm actually surprised by how few... how many lists have left her out? She's in 71%.
Right. Well, I was wondering, but is there a strategy in leaving her out in that she might not run as much this year as last year to try and protect the record?
Or to get injured or whatever, because otherwise it's not. Yeah. I don't know. It doesn't make sense, Jamie, unless you think she mightn't see the track or whatever.
I mean, it's you're the wrong side of a 150 point trade if you get that wrong and she doesn't get injured or what have you. No, I think you'd have to be some kind of mental to leave her out.
her story is great this year because she hasn't suffered defeat, and like the legacy of being a racehorse that has never been beaten means that you can always, in the bar at all hours of the morning, you can say, she was the best mare ever. She always had a bit in hand. Like, she could have won by more. But then you said, actually, no, she didn't because she was beaten that day in such and such. And it's like Henry de Bromhead, I know he's kind of, he's self-described like curmudgeon, or rather he's quite pessimistic at times. But I don't know, Jamie, it must be really, really hard to countenance her losing her unbeaten record when she's still, what is she now, 12 races, 12 victories.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's something that Henry actually, in a weird sort of way, wouldn't mind if she did get beat.
You get it out of the way.
Then he'd never have to talk about it again. I remember Nicky saying similar when Altior finally got beaten, and after a sort of long winning run. And yeah, I mean, it is that pressure. But then again, also Henry would be the first to tell you, wow, it's the best kind of pressure, though, isn't it? You'd rather be doing that than trying to pick a winner in a 0-100 to pay the bills.
Because okay. The odds of doing that are so astronomical. Like, Mo Salah was like 33-1 to score in the next six games and break whatever record it was. I think Jamie Vardy had the record or whatever. And you're thinking, oh, Mo Salah will score in every game. It's no problem. But it's 33-1 over six games. So you can imagine her over 12 races and then another 10 or whatever. It's really hard.
Yeah. So that's maybe the connections decide not to risk it and do a Floyd Mayweather and only win some easy races. Right, so a reminder, if you're watching or listening today, you can pick your top 10 to follow Jump Stable of Horses and enter either the free or paid game, which has a guaranteed minimum prize of 100 grand. You've got to visit tote.ie to enter by 11 o'clock on Saturday, November the 13th. So you kind of need to be getting your list together at this stage and getting on board and doing a bit of research and seeing exactly what they were. So, Danny, have you anything else for us this year? So you've talked there about Fiddler on the Roof and Fernie Hollow. Anything else? And On the Ropes, obviously.
I've gone with Clandestobo, another Nichols horse. I think he's got a good chance of, I presume he'll go to Haydock Kempton. Interesting, they skipped Cheltenham with him last year, went Aintree and Punchestown. I don't know what their plan will be in the spring this year, but there's a lot of bonus races. He has a good chance of winning.
You've put a bit of thought into this, Danny.
Yeah, you know, it's of the bonus races, there's 21 bonus races, 15 of them are chases, only six hurdlers. So in my list, I've gone, seven chasers, I think three hurdlers.
So it makes sense. That's why I'm copying his list, not yours.
Yeah. Well, Danny could have a very good season because he's a very, very mannerly lad. He doesn't, he's a good record off the track. He picks up spare rides because he's generally a likeable and very good rider. And you must be excited about the season ahead. I mean, you're starting off riding the Stairs Hurdle winner.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I suppose with the such a good season last year, it puts me in a better position to be able to pick up even more good rides this year. But it's up to me to keep riding to the best of my ability that owners want me on their horses. And after that, once I'm on the horses, it's my job to produce the best results, and the rest will happen after that.
Well, we wish you the very best of luck with it, Danny. Thanks a million for joining us today and for giving us the insight into your brain. And Jamie, thanks a million for explaining that to us. It was all very straightforward, and we look forward to the weekly tally being kept for the three of us. Cheers, lads.
Cheers.
Before we wrap up, we've got to talk about the Breeders' Cup here, right? And if anybody wants any more details on that, by the way, you can follow us on our social, of course, and you can get more details on the tote.ie as well. So that we'll obviously be updating it, as I said, week on, week out. And the Tote are going to donate $5,000 to the Injured Jockeys Fund on behalf of the winner at the end of the season. It's me versus you versus Danny. I'd say if I was handicapping this at the moment, he'd be 6-1 on, you'd be 2-1, and I'd be 15-1. In a three-horse race,
disgracefully bad odds. I mean, you should work at a regional dog track with odds like that. You should be ashamed of yourself. Actually, at least give me 4-1. If you get me 4-1, I back myself. I think you're probably a bit long on your own odds as well. If you pick the obvious ones, you know, it's not like fantasy football where
5 minutes ago you were patronising Danny and now you're patronising me. This is great.
I don't think I was patronising. Side bet between us just coming in there.
I'm not going to £2 head. In the three horse race.
Yeah, but you've Danny as raging hot favourite.
I know, but you can just watch what he's done and copy him.
Yeah.
This is your job. You literally get paid to tip horses.
Yeah, well, I've other interests as well. I was going to say something to you there, actually.
Is that like P. Flynn?
You try it sometime. Actually, Barry O'Halloran, I only realised years later, Barry, who I met at so many race meetings and other journalists, that I only realised years later was him who was asking the question on the Late Late, and he's a young journalist, yeah. Oh. Barry, who's a massive racing fan, but it's... The Breeders' Cup's going to be class. It's going to be
so no side bet.
Side bet, Jeff. Whatever you want, whatever you want.
€5
at 2-1.
Well, no, I'm not giving you 2-1. Like you've, I mean, I think it should be fairly close. It's just an even couple of hundred.
No way.
Why not?
Give me odds.
We've preserved our money during the pandemic. I haven't bought clothes in about 2 years. More or less cut down on air flight, all that.
Okay. We can have this conversation off air. We should do it with the tote, obviously.
It'll be a nominal bet.
€5.
Involve a number. yeah, that'll be a bit of fun. No, in fairness, the 10 to follow will be great crack this year. It's a serious, serious talent.
I think for a lot of us...
You don't need to bet on every race. You can, when you do stuff like this, like we need to find ways in racing where like it doesn't involve having bets as well. There are other ways to have fun and
think that fantasy
football and stuff like that.
Well, this is the fantasy football element of it. I really think that the drive to survive is coming to every sport.
It's a great idea.
You talk to administrators in any sport and every single one of them wants what Drive to Survive has done because it has...
Have you watched it?
Well, it's made it, and I've watched bits of it. Mm. Like, I haven't got mad into it the way I know. Like people who have no interest in sports,
are
coming. Oh, you must have seen this. I'm like, well, actually, I haven't. But I'd rather watch Succession personally. But I can see how, and all of a sudden, America is this. Every American city wants a Grand Prix, like out of nowhere. The power of television is,
or Netflix,
amazing. Mm. I mean, and so, but Amazon Prime did it for. They do it for American football. They do it for the Premier League. Like
the Irish racing, like the particularly, I've said it before, but the Curragh, like if you follow the characters just at the Curragh alone and cut down on your travel and cut down on the complexities of getting involved and follow those teams, there's so many stories. Like, and it's not necessarily about the race, it's just about what happened before and after.
The thing about Drive to Survive is that there is an editing process, but most of the characters are happy enough and the money involved is so great that they're happy enough to tell 9/10 of the truth. In a lot of sports, most sports are like, well, you can't have the good bits, you know.
Well, you'd have to pay them. That'd be a problem, I suppose. You'd have to, because in Irish racing, they give up their time freely and very often they just say it as it is. Like, it's a salacious old land as well at the best of times, so I don't know. It'd be great crack. Like, Kevin Prendergast...
Just need to fix the libel laws.
Well, yeah, that's...
Although you can't libel yourself. Right.
Yeah.
But that was a tangent. The Breeders' Cup.
Great couple of days in store, obviously starting tonight. And into... If you had a bet at Doncaster tomorrow, 12 hours later, you could still be planning a bet on the Breeders' Cup Classic. So that's how long the punting day is tomorrow. It's like so much going on. And I interviewed Aidan O'Brien 2 days ago, and he said, sorry, how long is this going to take? Because I'm just having my breakfast and I was having my dinner. So it's an 8-hour time gap. So they're over on the West Coast.
San Diego.
In Del Mar, yeah. And it's a really tricky track. But what's beautiful about this year is the span of Irish trainers that are involved. Like, I don't think Dunnock or Joseph have a runner, but obviously Aidan's well represented. But without having an outstanding favourite or anything, Paddy Toomey, Michael O'Callaghan, who runs Twilight Jet, and is extremely, extremely bullish about his chance, by the way. A case of you, Aidan McGuinness. We obviously had him on before and after. I think he's been probably on more often this year than any other trainer. Ger Lines, Dermot Weld, obviously with Tarnawa, who's the banker of the meet for any, and then Aidan O'Brien. And then there's the Bob Baffert story. Bob Baffert has not had a good year. Has runners. It's kind of hard to know how anyone will react if he has winners, which he probably will. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, okay. So that's on Saturday and Sunday night, or is it Friday and Saturday?
Friday and Saturday, yeah. So it's the Breeders' Cup, when people come into their head, it's like, go down to have a Breeders' Cup party, or like have a, you know, go down to the local pub if they're showing it. It is great fun, to be fair. Like, it's a long build up to each race, a lot of patriotic bets if you want. Stakes sensibly, but it's great crack. I have to say, a few beers in the Breeders' Cup is a great experience.
Okay, so Aidan McGuinness, Ger Lyons, Paddy Toomey, Dermot Weld,
and
Michael O'Callaghan. I think that's it on the Irish front. So it's great to see that span, and they all actually go over there with reasonable chances.
All right. Mm. Is there anything else this weekend that you think you want to?
Brilliant racing at Nason Ave, and it's like cracking National Hunt racing. It really does feel like the return of the jump season after Down Royal, and some very good horses coming back at Nace and Navan. Just really good cards in both. And Danny riding Florin Porter is very interesting because he's got a nice outside ride that is probably his to keep now. And it's just brilliant racing all weekend, to be honest.
All right, Jumps Racing is officially back. Friday Night Racing and Off the Ball is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. If you're going racing, check out hri.ie before you go to help you make your plans. We'll see you next week.
What is that bet going to be? Or
what?
The side bet.
5 euros.
Okay, 5 euros. All right. This is Ted and Father. What's his name? His rival, Father Dick Byrne. Yeah, kicks. Okay, kick somebody up the arse.
Yeah, you can kick me up the ass if you win.
All right. Like, are we doing this live for HRI?
Yeah, absolutely.
Bare ass or?
No, not bare ass. I'm not bearing my ass. No one wants to see that, Johnny.
That was Friday Night Race.
We'll see you next week.
Friday Night Race on Off the Ball. Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.